The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
A listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, this is 91.3 KUAF. 91.3 is your home for NPR News throughout the day with newscasts every hour. We're also where you can hear in-depth conversations about news, policy, culture, and more every day on programs like 1A and Fresh Air. You can find a schedule of all of our shows at KUAF.com. And this is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, February 7th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. In about 8 minutes on today's show, Arkansas's plan for expanding Medicaid insurance to more people has had some close calls during recent legislative sessions, barely getting enough support to pass. It's time again to wonder if Arkansas Works will get approved. Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, will talk with the President Pro Tem of the Senate, Jonathan Dismang, about the approaching fiscal session and Arkansas Works. First, last year, Dr. Christian Joskowski, a public health research scientist based at the University of Arkansas, conducted an anonymous survey at the behest of a state legislator to measure sexual assault on campus. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, the disturbing results appear to be spurring political action.
Christian Joskowski, an associate professor of public health in the College of Education and Health Professions, investigates and researches the spectrum of human sexuality, from desire and pleasure to sexual consent and violence. In 2016, she met State Representative Greg Letting, Democrat, District 86, Fayetteville, at a Northwest Arkansas forum on sexual violence. Letting asked Joskowski if she could provide him hard data on the incidence of sexual assault on the University of Arkansas campus. She agreed.
And so I conducted an online anonymous survey that was administered to students through a number of general elective courses. That way we could get a somewhat diverse sample in terms of course majors, in terms of year in school. So we were not particularly targeting any general major or demographic in particular.
The survey was posted online last year after students had attended classes for several months. Joskowski asked class instructors and professors to encourage students to participate. More than 1,000 women and men did.
31% of the sample report of women in the sample reported non-consensual sexual contact. So this could include non-consensual touching, non-consensual oral sex, non-consensual vaginal penile sex, or non-consensual anal sex. So it did include a range of behaviors.
A majority of sexual assault, she says, occurred in a dorm, residence hall, or at a Greek life party, or campus adjacent, a public party or apartment. Joskowski concedes the percentage reported is high.
But I also think that it's important to point out that this is not brand new, that women have been experiencing pretty high rates of sexual assault for decades.
Joskowski says a majority of students have engaged in consensual sexual activity prior to enrolling in college, which continues. But students and the public remain mostly unaware of just how pervasive sexual assault is on major college campuses.
Yeah, so I asked demographic questions, so students' year in school, their age, their gender, race, ethnicity, things like that. I asked victimization questions, and that means their experiences of sexual assault. And so I had sexual assault that included non-consensual touching as well as non-consensual penetration. And then I also asked about attempts at sexual assault, so attempted penetration that wasn't completed but was still not consensual. And that I used a measure called the Sexual Experience Survey, which is a validated sort of gold standard measure, and that measure very much corresponds with how the University of Arkansas defines sexual assault according to their student code of conduct.
And certain predators, Joskowski says, fit a certain profile.
People who perpetrate sexual assault are actually more likely to have been a victim of sexual assault, particularly in childhood. So there's one factor. Alcohol consumption is also a risk factor. Specific attitudes or belief structures like views around traditional gender roles or hostility toward women, men who express sort of a what we call precarious masculinity. So this view that their masculinity is constantly being challenged and they need to prove their masculinity.
Jaskowski says the culture has not traditionally held men accountable, but that's changing with the rise of the Me Too movement, women coming forward to report sexual assault in sport, entertainment, and in the workplace.
You have gender discrepancies when it comes to power, and that manifests on college campuses as well, and that men typically have more power on college campuses. Just in general, in our culture, men are positioned as having more power, and with more power comes the opportunity to take advantage.
The survey, however, revealed most women who've experienced sexual assault do not report it.
College women experience sexual assault at higher rates during their first year on campus. And first year is a time where students are trying to fit in, they're trying to make friends, they don't want to call attention to themselves in a negative way.
Victims should report sexual assault, Jaskowski says, to authorities. Under a federal statute known as Title IX, publicly funded schools are required to respond and remedy situations of sexual harassment and sexual violence. Failure to do so violates federal law, placing the institution at risk for losing federal funding. A Title IX case brought by a female UA student reported to have been raped is currently under appeal in the Eighth Circuit. On January 18th, Kristen Jaskowski presented her sexual assault survey findings to the Arkansas Legislative Council's Higher Education Subcommittee. Democratic State Representative Greg Letting co-chairs the subcommittee. He said the survey results are shocking.
I think there were a few statistics that jumped out at me, namely that nearly a quarter of the people had reported two or more sexual assaults, and roughly the same number reported that their sexual assault involved two or more perpetrators. I was not necessarily surprised to learn that not many people had reported their assault to the Fayetteville Police or the UAPD, but it was surprising that not a single person had reported their assault to the police, and I think that's a sign of a potentially very big problem.
Jaskowski says victims of sexual assault often fear authority, as well as being ostracized by their peers. Although abstinence is widely taught, she says, Arkansas is one of 14 states that do not mandate sex education as part of public school health curricula. Letting says that issue may be taken up during the next general session in 2019.
We had a couple of Republican lawmakers suggest that at our meeting because there are a number of people who believe that we can't wait to address this issue once students arrive on campus. This is the kind of thing that we need to be teaching and talking about at a much earlier age.
Kristen Jaskowski says data show comprehensive sex education yields myriad positive results,
as well as healthy relationships, communication, promotion of self-esteem, and so forth. There's a lot of elements to good sexuality education. So I think people focus on this, okay, you're just going to teach kids about sex. Sure, you're going to teach them how to have safe sex, how to have sex consensually, how to understand if your partner wants to have sex with you. And in fact, comprehensive sex education has shown to delay sexual initiation, meaning people who experience comprehensive sex ed are more likely to have sex later than they are if they experience abstinence education or no education at all.
Now, in late 2014, then-President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden launched the It's on Us initiative, a campaign to raise awareness about ending sexual assault on college campuses. A task force report titled Not Alone revealed one in five female students reported being sexually assaulted. As a consequence, the U.S. Department of Education called for a federal investigation across campuses, including the University of Arkansas. But late last year, the U.S. Department of Education, under President Trump, revoked Obama's initiative, driving, critics say, campus sexual assault victims back into the shadows. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Groundhog Day was last week, but there is a certain Groundhog Day repetitiveness to the conversation surrounding this month's session of the Arkansas Legislature. Again, there is discussion about whether Arkansas's own Medicaid expansion plan, now called Arkansas Works, will have enough support in the state Senate to see another year. Recently, Roby Brock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, asked Senator Jonathan Dismang, the president pro tem of the Senate, about the upcoming session.
Let's begin first with the resignation of State Senator Jake Files, who's the chairman of the Revenue and Tax Committee, pled guilty to three federal charges there. All of this kind of centers around problems we've seen off and on over the years with general improvement funds.
Right.
I guess my question to you is just your assessment of Senator Files' situation, and where do you see general improvement funds going?
Regarding Senator Files, I think all the members would consider Jake a friend, and what we do appreciate is the fact that he's taken responsibilities for his actions, one by submitting his resignation letter, then also by the plea agreement that he made. So again, very unfortunate situation. And sad situation, but we'll be praying for him and his family, and again, appreciate him taking responsibility.
General improvement funds, as I mentioned, at the center of some of this controversy. Are we done with general improvement funds for the future as a legislature?
Right. I mean, general improvement funds are always going to exist. I mean, we would hope that in every budget we'll be able to have a surplus. And so how do we use those dollars? General Improvement Fund was an option that had been used in the past, but I will say over the last few years, 4 years in particular, we've really made a stride to push that into what was called the Rainy Day Fund. And that Rainy Day Fund has some limitations that aren't utilized in regular GIF or General Improvement Funds. And that is the governor has to make the request and the legislative body has to approve it. So it's got a lot more oversight. And I think some type of model for those surplus funds is what we'll see in the future.
You and I both know that one of the positive things that happens with general improvement funds is that they go to communities where there just is no opportunity for some of the funds for certain projects, senior citizen centers, boys and girls clubs, sometimes community parks and things like that. What will be the process for maybe keeping some of the good in what we've seen in general improvement funds?
I think identifying those needs on the front end and then having a process through appropriation, again, approval by the governor, signature by the governor, and more of an equal distribution that is based on population or some other, you know, determining factor, but not at the will of the legislative body.
Okay. I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Right.
You've got something in your mind, I guess, so maybe we will see more on that.
In the bottom line, we need to have more oversight over how those funds are spent. We've made progress in the last few years. I think we've got a good model to utilize and in a good direction.
All right, losing Senator Files, and you're already down two state senators, one due to death of Senator Standridge, one due to the resignation of Senator Eddie Joe Williams. Three positive votes for the Arkansas Works Program, which is really going to be, I think, the main focus of this next legislative session, the fiscal session, be the big one of the biggest stories there. You only passed by one vote last time. I'm no mathematician, but I'm just saying that when you lose three with a one-vote margin, you probably got a little deficit there. Do you have the votes to pass Arkansas Works?
We're working through that right now to kind of see where the votes are. I'm not a big vote counter on the front end until we actually get into the session because things change. Right now, members are, you know, asking questions of DHS, trying to get information back so they can make a good educated decision about where they want to be on the program. I think things that help are the fact that, you know, the governor has submitted the waiver request, for instance, for the work requirement. That provides ease to some of the members that in the past were not supportive of the program.
You think it changes their votes?
I think it does, and it has changed some of their votes. I think you saw that during the last session, and that'll continue on. Again, I think, you know, with the governor's commitment, DHS making sure the information's available, at the end of the day, I think we'll get there.
You think you'll get there in the state Senate? All right.
Yes, sir.
What happens if you don't get there? What are your options if you don't get there?
Well, I mean, so we're working through that with some of the members, too, that have that very question. And, you know, the only way to limit the expenditure of those funds on the expanded population is through a line that says these funds cannot be used for the expanded population. That's really what created what was the line item veto last time. It's a very difficult position to get to say that the program won't exist because I don't see how those opposed get to a 75% threshold to pass any appropriation.
And it's in the DHS budget,
too.
So you would be stopping a lot of other potential programs that impact human services in that respect. There's been some talk, probably more on the other end of the Capitol than your end of the Capitol, about a potential special session, that might be an option to deal with the Arkansas Works budget. Is that viable to you?
I mean, that's not anywhere I want to go in the very near future. I think, again, we need to focus on making sure members have information. Let's get to this session, see what happens. And if it doesn't pass, then we can move on to other options. But at this point, it is not my goal to have a special session on Arkansas Works or really any other policy matter for that.
You don't see an opportunity or a need to maybe have a special session call to deal with this pharmacy benefits manager situation that we're seeing?
On the people, well, I mean, and so I've made the request to my local pharmacies and others involved, is what do you want that legislation to look like? And there is no model for us to go base off of what we should do. And so I think it's a pretty complicated decision and would be complicated legislation to try to come up with in that short period of time. In my mind, that's an issue that we should be dealing with in the regular session. As far as the pricing and making sure that there's access for the members of the Arkansas Work program, I hope and I believe that Blue Cross Blue Shield and the other insurance agencies are working to make sure that access exists with the pharmacies, which means providing for a proper reimbursement rate.
State Senator Jonathan Dismaying is a Republican from Searcy and is President Pro Tem of the Arkansas Senate. He talked with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. The fiscal session of the Arkansas Legislature is scheduled to open Monday.
Talk Business and Politics is sponsored by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks, you have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, we serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. Arkansas Manufacturing Solutions, providing executive-level leadership and management consultative services to Arkansas companies in the areas of innovation, exporting, operational excellence, and sustainability. More information at mfgsolutions.org. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
Ozark Folkways is making a pretty sweet offer for you this weekend. The Folkways folks are planning a Saturday afternoon of chocolate and champagne and art. David Holcomb, an artist who lives in Winslow, will guide participants through a session designed to help them express Valentine's Day love on canvas. Every person at the three-hour event will leave with a Valentine piece of art ready to deliver. To help set the mood, there will be fine chocolate and champagne provided. All of the art supplies provided as well. This takes place Saturday from 1 until 4 at Ozark Folkways in Winslow. And you can find out more, including cost, at ozarkfolkways.org. Tomorrow night in Bentonville, the opening reception for the latest art exhibit at 21C Museum Hotel called Labor and Materials will take place. At 6 tomorrow night, Chief Curator Alice Gray Stites will discuss the work included in the exhibit. And then at 7, there will be a panel discussion in the main gallery featuring artist Lena Puerta and filmmaker Ava Lowry of the Southern Foodways Alliance. The event tomorrow night is free and open to the public. And the annual Day of Percussion is Saturday at the University of Arkansas campus. From 9 to 4, guest artists and educators will provide instruction for percussion enthusiasts in junior high school, and college. Registration is at 9 Saturday morning in the Faulkner Performing Arts Lobby. And it includes, the whole event includes percussion ensembles, a drum set clinic, and more. You can find out more at communitymusicschool.uark.edu. communitymusicschool.uark.edu. And still to come on today's Ozarks at Large, let's go to Paris.
Can you imagine Paris? I mean, all things Parisian were stripped away. And here's this girl, this Jew, who is being harbored by my character, Madame Borel, who is sort of the grand dame of all, you know, control and moving the story forward. She's got a hand in everything.
An American in Paris has landed on the Walton Art Center stage. That's later on today's show.
The center of a story, it's not so easy to find when things are moving quickly.
President Trump will sign an executive order.
Came up in a car, shot at police.
This weapon was aimed at a network.
There will not be a government shutdown because everyone...
Every morning, rely on NPR to find the people and ideas at the center of the story so you understand what's happening and what it means to you. Stand with the facts. Listen to Morning Edition every day.
Tomorrow morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3. Big congratulations are in order for a member of the KUAF family. Caitlin Ahrens, who you hear every Friday during Science Friday on 91.3, she hosts Scratching the Surface about science and space, has been named a 2018 Outstanding Young West Virginia. Caitlin isn't just on Scratching the Surface on Fridays, and, by the way, also during Weekend Ozarks at Large on Sunday morning on 91.3. She also leads a monthly space lecture at the Fayetteville Public Library, and as a NASA ambassador, she also goes regularly to schools in Northwest Arkansas to talk to students about NASA's space exploration missions. Congratulations, Caitlin Ahrens, a 2018 Outstanding Young West Virginian. You can hear Scratching the Surface Friday afternoons inside Science Friday on 91.3, and then again on Sunday mornings, Weekend Ozarks at Large between 9 and 10 on KUAF.
91.3 is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include radiation, CLIA-certified labs, a multidisciplinary lung clinic, and a lung cancer screening program. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. The annual Fayetteville Mardi Gras Parade is Saturday, February 10th, beginning at 2 p.m. on the downtown square and continues down Dixon Street. This family-friendly event will feature floats, walkers, costumes, and Mardi Gras beads. All participants and volunteers should register at FayettevilleMardiGras.com.
The NAACP is suing the Trump administration for its decision to end temporary protected status for Haitian immigrants. The Obama administration gave the protections to Haitians in January 2010 following an earthquake that killed more than 100,000 people. The NAACP argues the Department of Homeland Security intended to discriminate against Haitian immigrants living in the United States because of their race and national origin. As evidence of this discrimination, the NAACP cites an Associated Press report that DHS sought crime data on Haitians with TPS, as well as information on how many Haitian nationals were receiving public benefits. The complaint also alleges the president's public hostility toward immigrants of color was a contributing factor in the decision to rescind Haitians' protected status. As an example, the NAACP points to a 2017 New York Times report that the president suggested Haitians, quote, all have AIDS. Yannick Saint-Jean, who teaches sociology at Northwest Arkansas Community College, says the notion that AIDS is prevalent among Haitians is a common stereotype. Through a new study abroad program to Haiti this summer, this native Haitian is hoping to combat negative stereotypes about her people and teach students about the history and culture of the Caribbean nation. Last week, she came to Studio 123 to speak with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda about the new program.
I love Haiti, and I love Haitians, and I know why they are here. And I know the contributions of Haiti to the United States and to the world. And when I think that, when I see them being... I think that Haiti has had a lot of problems associated with the Haitian Revolution, what happened after the revolution, and international relations that have sometimes created or contributed to the problems that the country has. And I think that this is not taken into account when we see people coming from Haiti to the United States and asking for,
help.
Help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So have you been able to, do you visit Haiti very often? Have you been back since the earthquake?
No. As a matter of fact, it was 30 years until I was 30 or... more than 25 years before I returned to Haiti. I went back after the earthquake in 2011 and then with the University of Massachusetts, and then a couple of years later with Florida International University, twice, to shadow the study abroad, to see how they did their study abroad. So I went back, and I think that I understand a lot more about Haiti now than I did a while back when I first came to the United States. I do understand more. I think if one understands the history of Haiti and the history of the relationship between Haiti and Western countries, people will understand where Haiti is today, the reason why it is where it is today.
You mentioned that people don't necessarily know the contributions that Haiti has made, like, to the United States. What are some of those?
I think the big one, or the first black country to earn its independence after defeating Napoleon's army in 1803, and celebrating the independence in 1804, January 1, 1804. The Louisiana Purchase. The revolution started in 1791. It was central to the United States acquisition of Louisiana, which doubled the size of the United States. That's one. Haitian volunteer in the they volunteered to fight in the American Revolution. And there is a monument erected to them in Savannah, Georgia. So there's a lot that people do not know about Haiti. And so I think that is actually the root, perhaps the roots of the stereotypes.
What stereotypes do you think people have of
Haitians?
Oh,
my goodness. There are several. But whenever you hear Haiti, you will hear it is the poorest country of the Western Hemisphere. That's the first thing that you will hear. We'll also hear people practice voodoo in Haiti. But they are thinking of voodoo, V-O-O-D-O-O, as in voodoo economics, not V-O-D-O-U, the African religion that is practiced in Haiti. So that is a stereotype, because the V-O-O-D-O-O is connected to black magics. That's what people think about when they think about Haitians. And these are the two things that they think about Haitians. The stereotypes, the current stereotypes are rooted in historical stereotypes. If we go to the Secretary of State, William Jennings Bryan, he was Secretary of State between 1913 and 1915 under Woodrow Wilson. I won't tell you what he said, but you could Google him. And find out what he said. I will not repeat what he said about Haitians. But, you know, you can Google and you'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think having Haitians here in the United States has helped maybe combat some of those stereotypes? Because, you know, I get to meet someone like you who's from Haiti, and I've never met a Haitian before, you know, and I get to learn more about the country and I get to learn more about its people.
Again, it's the stereotypes. You know, people see, people think of Haitians as, they have a certain mental image of who Haitians are and what they look like. But it's, you know, many Haitians are in the United States. There's a brain drain, by the way. You have a lot of physicians who have studied medicine at the University of Haiti, at the School of Medicine in Haiti. They come to the United States and they practice here. And so there's a brain drain intellectuals, of professionals. And the United States is benefiting from that.
And some of these things that we've talked about, I assume your students will be able to learn if they go on your study abroad. Why was the study abroad program something that you wanted to organize?
Haiti has a complex culture. It has a glorious history. It's a land of artists. Haitian art is known all over the world. The country has beautiful sights and friendly people. The culture is a mix of African and European, French primarily, but even some American elements have been infused since the occupation of Haiti by the United States, 1919-1934. The peacekeeping mission that was there for approximately 13 years since 2004, it's no longer there, it's gone. And the multiplication of NGOs and missionaries in the country since the earthquake. So these leave their marks on the language, the music, the food, the religion, and all that. And so it's very hard to grasp. It's unique. It's very hard to grasp this culture. It's very hard to understand Haiti. And so I think it's important that we go there, that people have this experience of cultural immersion in order to see the real Haiti, to understand the real Haiti. There's a beautiful landscape. The French used to call it the Pearl of the Antilles, La Perle des Antilles. Yet most people who go to Haiti have never been outside of Port-au-Prince. That's all they know, Port-au-Prince. So The people, too, of the I've already said that, but the people are very friendly. They are hospitable. They're generous to a fault. They will give what they don't have. And they are very religious. You will hear repeated, bon Dieu bon, bon Dieu bon, si bon Dieu voulait. That means God is good, God is good, if God willing. And these are usually painted on the tap-tap, the bus, the colorful buses uh-huh. on the streets. These are usually painted on that. On them, and the glorious past of the country we just talked about, I think is important for students and other people to know. So there is a disconnect between the Haiti I know and love and the stereotypes that I hear in the United States. Stereotypes that hurt sometimes. Yeah,
and you want the students to be able to learn that. You know, by going and seeing for themselves.
I think they will be able to do that by going and seeing it, by seeing the monuments, things like the Citadelle, La Ferrière in Cap Haïtien. That's where we're going. We'll be going to Cap Haïtien. The Citadelle, La Ferrière in Cap Haïtien, the fortress that was built at the very top of a mountain. And you wonder, when you see the Citadelle, you wonder, how could they have done this? How could they have built this? It is a UNESCO heritage site. Mm-hmm. You know, if they can see the monuments and ask questions about the monuments, they'll understand something about the history of Haiti.
And this is the first time you've organized this trip, correct?
This is the first time that, yes, and we've been trying to get it going, and we're not able to get it going. We're trying to get people to join. By the way, it's not just for students. It's also for members of the community.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's open to the community.
Well, what are some of the challenges you've faced in putting this together, obviously getting the word out and letting people know about it?
Well, there's a long list of challenges, but I will give you two. The stereotypes. The stereotypes previously mentioned and many others. You know, how can I get people excited about cultural immersion in Haiti when the representation of the country are so negative? It's very hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, you hear that Haitian have AIDS, Haitian, you know, and other things that, you know, I won't mention here. Things that, you know, people don't want to go there. They would rather go somewhere else. They would rather go to Europe or where they wouldn't have to face that such problem. People think of Haiti as a place where people go help. People go...
On mission
do
trips.
Charity. Yeah. Do charity. And there's a, I was told, I have not heard this, but there's a Haitian psychiatrist who said that, nous sommes devenus un peuple de mendiants. You know, we have become a people of, a group of beggars. That's what we've become. That's what people think about Haiti. But Haiti is rich. It's a rich country. It's a very rich country. And people talk about poverty. People need to talk about the kind of poverty. Is it economic poverty? Is it cultural poverty? What kind of poverty? Okay. And then what has contributed to this poverty? Look at the historical factors that have led to this poverty. So that's the stereotypes. That's a big one. That's a big one. And then money. The students are working and sometimes two jobs, and we have single parents, they have families, and many other obligations. And so the cost of the 7-day in-country is often beyond their reach.
You mentioned the Citadel. What are some of the other places that you will get to go visit or organizations that you'll speak to?
So we'll go to the Citadel. We'll go to the Sans Souci Palace. We will go to the cultural center. There's a cultural center and where they have dances and Haitian food and all that. We'll go there. We will go to a beach called Plage du Paradis. It's beautiful. I've been there with Florida International University. It is beautiful. It's right next to La Badie. I would like for us to visit a school. We do not yet have permission to do it. There's a university that I would like to take the students to. It's been donated to Haiti by the Dominican Republic after the earthquake, and it's also in Limonade, close to Cap Haïtien, and we still don't have permission to go there. What happens with Haiti is that in order to organize something, you have to be there sometimes and talk to people face to face. And so we hope to be able to go there, and we hope to be able to visit a school. And we will have the first day that when we get there, we'll have a walking tour of the city to look at the gingerbread architecture, the ones that are left by the French.
You talk about the poverty and that people have the stereotype of having and where that comes from and that sort of thing. How has the earthquake impacted the country since 2010, and how has that changed things and maybe complicated things?
Oh, well, you have a lot more people who do not have a home. And the earthquake was an equal opportunity event, because even the president of the country, my understanding is that, you know, we don't have a national palace. The president couldn't be there, could not be there. I think he had a home somewhere else. I don't know what happened to the home, but even the president, you know, had a problem with housing. The tents, when I visited Haiti a couple of years ago, there were still tents on the streets, people mm-hmm. living in tents. It has complicated. You know, natural disasters have complicated the problems of Haiti, the existing problems of Haiti.
How do you feel that the recovery process is going if just a few years ago? I understand that with earthquakes and hurricanes and natural mm-hmm. disasters, yes. it can take a long time to mm-hmm. recover. Mm-hmm. What is the process been like, or how is it going? I mean, I think on one hand, at least from this end of things, I would argue that the administration is under the assumption that things are better because they are ending mm-hmm. temporary protected status mm-hmm. next year, implying mm-hmm. that they can go home and mm-hmm. things are better and they don't need mm-hmm. as much assistance. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's true?
No, it is slow. The progress is slow. There is progress because I went in 2011, then I came back. I went back in, I think it was 2013, and again 2014. So every time that I go there, I see improvement, but it's not as fast as it could go. My understanding is that the money is not given directly to the Haitian government, I'm going to say 1%, about 1% that they've had, and then the rest of the money goes to Haiti through NGOs. And apparently these NGOs do what they think that Haitians need rather than having Haitians tell them what they need. They are putting their own values on what people need, and hiring people from their countries, right? So there's a problem. There's a big problem with NGOs. Mm-hmm. A big problem with NGOs.
Obviously, it's important for your students and whoever else goes on the trip to see historical sites mm-hmm. and then learn about the history of Haiti. Mm-hmm. But what does it mean for them to be able to learn more about the history of today? You know, for example, seeing that people are still living in tents after this earthquake.
I don't think that they will get a chance to see it on this first trip, because we are going to Cap Haïtien. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that the earthquake affected that part mm-hmm. of the country. Cap Haïtien is a historic city and a historic and touristic city. There have been floods, and there was an earthquake a long time ago that actually damaged the Sans Souci Palace. But I don't think that they will see tents in Cap Haïtien.
Okay.
They would see tents in Port-au-Prince and areas that are close to Port-au-Prince, but not in Cap Haïtien. I think it would, if they saw that though, I think it would help them to recognize the privileges that they have in this country. And I think that it would help them to appreciate more what they have in this country. Yeah, that would be a good lesson for them.
For the kids that do go on this trip, when they come back, what are you hoping for them to bring back with them? Where do you hope that they go from there, from having that experience?
I hope that they will want to go back. They will want to go back, because the trip is short for 7 days. 7 days. We do that because it's a first trip, and we want to focus on one city, and because of all the stereotypes, of course, and just want to, you know, keep it very controlled. But they will want to go back, because that's what happens. When people go to Haiti, they fall in love with the country. They fall in love with the people. It's easy to fall in love with Haiti.
Thanks so much for your time, and I hope your trip is a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me here. Oh, I should say it in Haitian Creole. Merci en pile.
That was Northwest Arkansas Community College faculty member Yannick Sinja speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda at the Carver Center for Public Radio last week. The trip to Haiti is scheduled for June 16th through the 25th. The registration deadline is March 1st. More information is available at nwac.edu/web. nwacc.edu/study-abroad, nwacc.edu/web/study-abroad. If you can't participate in the trip but would be interested in supporting a scholarship, you can contact the Northwest Arkansas Community College Foundation. This is Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Theater Squared Season 12 continues with Tony Award-winning play The Humans by Stephen Karam. Mr. Blake brings his family to his daughter's apartment in New York to celebrate Thanksgiving. As darkness falls outside, mysterious things start to go bump in the night, and family tensions reach a boiling point. Performances Wednesday through Sunday through February 18th. 443-5600 or theater2.org for tickets.
An American in Paris opened at Walton Arts Center last night and brings to the stage a post-war city of lights, complete with stunning dance, music by George and Ira Gershwin, and a love story that isn't just a love triangle, but a love rectangle. Terry Hansen is Madame Borel, a woman very much guiding the arts world of post-war Paris and guiding the players in our story. Terry Hansen has performed throughout the world on some of the most famous stages. Think Broadway, Lincoln Center, the Kurt Weill Festival. And she says the names associated with this Tony-winning creation represent some of the best theater has to offer.
Well, Craig Lucas, you know, a wonderful writer, wrote Light in the Piazza and this wonderful book. Much differently from the film, we have these three men who are all enamored with Lise, and she serves as their muse. She serves as their inspiration to be re-illuminated as Paris had been occupied for 4 years by the Nazis. They were not allowed to play jazz music. How ironic. Mm-hmm. Here's Gershwin, one of the great, you know, steeped in jazz, supplying the score in these wonderful songs like Swonderful and The Man I Love. And, of course, I'll Build a Stairway to Paradise and these great songs. But they weren't allowed to listen to jazz. They lived under martial law. Can you imagine Paris? I mean, all things Parisian were stripped away. And here's this girl, this Jew, who is being harbored by my character, Madame Borel, who is sort of the grand dame of all, you know, control and moving the story forward. She's got a hand in everything. But she is this young ballerina who is struggling, but also on her journey and coming back to life and trying to achieve her dream. It's a wonderful, it's a love story, a many-faceted love story. And, of course, when you have a score by George Gershwin and lyrics by Ira Gershwin, and, of course, the choreography of Tony Award-winning Christopher Wheeldon and sets and costumes by Tony Award-winning Bob Crowley, you just can't go wrong.
You mentioned your character, and she is the guide to let us know that she's having a difficult time renavigating post-war, what she can say, what she can do, because for so long under the occupation, she couldn't.
Not only navigated the Nazi occupation of Paris, but World War I, which was, you know, not long before that. So we sometimes forget that Italy, France, Germany, all of Europe was embroiled in World War I and got just a short breather before Hitler started amassing his army and invading every single country to the east, to the west. And also, I mean, you know, we also had the other factions of World War II happening as well in Japan and also Italy. So we had different factions all coming together. We sort of focus only on the German army, the Nazis, but all the entire world, literally from Africa to the United States to Canada to England, was at war. And it blindsided everyone. No one could have imagined that Paris would have been taken over by the Nazis. It was inconceivable. So this woman who has lived through two world wars is very strong and almost has denied her own Parisian identity. And this is one of the another wonderful through line of the story, that art, that music, that dance, all of these things, iconic things that we think of when we think of Paris, were subjugated and come back into fruition, come back into the light, so that Paris reclaims its status of the city of light over this dark period.
I'm going to end this with My Funny Valentine from your CD. You have this this relationship with Richard Rodgers, too. Really, the great American songbook. But how,
I do.
Where did the devotion to Richard Rodgers come from?
Well, isn't that an excellent question? How could you not be devoted to the EGOT winner? There are only a handful of them. And ironically, another EGOT winner, Marvin Hamlisch, was the one who really gave me a personal relationship with Richard Rodgers. I toured with Marvin for years. I had the great good fortune of singing with wonderful symphonies with him, the Philadelphia Orchestra, Pittsburgh Symphony, many, the National Symphony Orchestra, Boston Pops. But I started singing with him, with Richard Rodgers. And for 2 years, we toured doing the music of not only Richard Rodgers and the lyrics of Oscar Hammerstein, but also the lyrics of many other wonderful lyricists who worked with Richard Rodgers. The night of our first concert with the Pittsburgh Symphony, I was out after the show signing autographs, and Marvin came up to me and he said, "Where's your CD?" And I said, "Mr. Hamlisch, I don't have a CD." And he said, "Our next gig is in 5 weeks. I want you to have the CD." And I said, "Whose music should I do?" And he said, "Richard Rodgers, the greatest composer who ever lived," says Marvin Hamlisch.
So you're going to say yes.
Yes, sir, I did. And Marvin was a tremendous inspiration to me. These wonderful lyrics that you're about to hear, My Funny Valentine, this arrangement is by Bill Holcomb, who's a wonderful arranger. And, you know, these are songs that still inspire, that still breed romance and, you know, all of those wonderful feelings and thoughts and the joie de vivre and the pulse that we get in our hearts when we listen to the music of the great American songbook and the and musical theater like this wonderful American in Paris with George and Ira Gershwin. So I encourage everyone to come out and see us.
It runs through Sunday. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Terry Hansen is Madame Borel in the touring production of An American in Paris, now at Walton Arts Center. There are, beginning tonight, 7 more performances, including matinees tomorrow at 1:30 and Saturday and Sunday afternoons at 2. You can learn much more at waltonartscenter.org. And, as promised, this is Terry Hansen performing Richard Rodgers' My Funny Valentine from her All Richard Rodgers CD, Into Your Arms, Love Songs of Richard Rodgers.
Behold the way our fine feathered friend his virtue doth parade. Thou knowest not, my dim-witted friend, the picture thou hast made. Thy vacant brow and thy tousled hair conceal thy good intent. Thou noble, upright, truthful, sincere, and slightly dopey gent, you're my funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine. You make me smile with my heart. Your looks are laughable, unphotographable, yet you're my favorite work of art.
This is Ozarks at Large.
KUAF is more than what you hear on the radio. The KUAF app lets you listen to our live stream, plus 24-hour classical music on KUAF2 and jazz and local music programs on KUAF3. You can find those streams online, too, at KUAF.com, plus the Ozarks at Large and other local podcasts. These digital services are free for you, but they cost KUAF more money each year. Your gift ensures important programming is available to you anytime, anywhere. Support the programming you rely on by making a gift right now at supportkuaf.com.
A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Van Buren. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Earlier on the program, Terry Hansen, who is part of the cast of An American in Paris, mentioned a term that maybe you haven't heard. She mentioned that Richard Rodgers and Marvin Hamlisch were winners of EGOTs. EGOT, E-G-O-T, is an unofficial but recognized honor for the 12 artists who have each won an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. So take the first letter from each award. You have EGOT. Richard Rodgers, by the way, the first to win all four of the major awards, doing so in 1962. He was the only person to have all four awards until 1977, when both Helen Hayes and Rita Moreno became EGOT winners. And while there are now a dozen EGOT entertainers, only two people can claim a PGOT. So add a P for Pulitzer to that acronym. Richard Rodgers and Marvin Hamlisch. We could see a third PGOT winner soon. Lin-Manuel Miranda of Hamilton fame already has the Pulitzer, the Grammy, and Tony, and is just shy an Oscar. All right, we're going to end this show with Goose. The band will be at George's Majestic Lounge Saturday night. You can learn more about them on their Facebook page. You can learn more about the Saturday night show at georgesmajesticlounge.com. This is the band recorded inside the Carver Center for Public Radio, recording What Am I Running From? Have a great rest of your Wednesday. What have I done now that I'm finally standing still? I'm asking, what am I running from? What am I running from? Thought I'd like it being on my own. Look around, nothing's familiar. Got your letters. Don't know why I haven't picked up the phone. Afraid to think that I failed ya. And I say, oh no, what did I do? I left everything I ever loved behind. And that means you and I say, oh no, what have I done? Now that I'm finally standing still, I'm asking, what am I running from? What am I running from? What am I running from? Nothing is chasing me. I just keep going in circles, trying to avoid who I've become. This isn't who I want to be or who I wanted you to see. And I say, oh no, what did I do? I left everything I ever loved behind, and that means you, I say. What have I done now that I'm finally standing still? I'm asking, oh no, what did I do? I left everything I ever loved behind, and that means you, I say, oh no. I've done, now that I'm finally standing still, I'm asking, what am I running from? 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 What am I running from?